live from Jackson's Bar and Grill. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Five o'clock here. We're hanging out at Jackson's Bar and Grill. Come on down, grab some dinner. Happy hour drinks. $5 on a lot of the drinks. Griffin's back in the Finley Toyota studios. We're going to catch up with our buddy Arash, man about town, Mr. L.A. He'll talk about some of the things going on around the UFC with their press conference today. Griffin, before we talk to Dominic Reyes, UFC light heavyweight, I was talking about some key programming going bye-bye on the mixed martial arts scene, and that is with SiriusXM. I did a bunch of stuff with Sirius. I don't even know what years now, like 2014 to 19, something like that. It might have been, something like that, on their Fight Nation channel. And we have RJ Clifford on. But I saw the bad news from RJ today that Sirius has decided to make their Fight Nation channel all professional wrestling. So for now, I guess no more MMA. And it's, you know, one of the rare spots that had MMA talk, and now we lose that. That's not a good thing for the MMA space to have less legit media and expertise on the air and then part of the media group.
No, definitely not. It's not good for the sport. You know, regardless of feelings towards the media from certain people in the sports world, when you have real professional media members coming and covering your sport and really getting into the important topics and really talking about the things that matter and cause influence, I know in this day and age of digital, you know, everything, social media creators can kind of seem like they might be taking that place. But the thing is, you kind of need a balance of both. You do want the fans to be making content and talking about your sport, talking about your product, but you also want the professionals. You do want these professional media members from real established publications, networks, anything, to be talking about your sport. So if you alienate one of those sides, you know, you're not going to have a good balance. You're not going to have the promotion and the, you know, spread the awareness of your product the way you would if you just embrace all types of media coming to cover you.
And I'll make a joke about this, but it's sort of serious. The role of a place like SiriusXM and where others like us serve a real purpose can be on the most basic level, because I've been talking for 5 or 6 days about the Canelo Crawford press conferences where no one would actually ask a specific time when the fight will start here on September 13th. I think it's official now. I think they're going to be fighting at 5 o'clock Pacific time at Allegiant Stadium, which again is a story that does not happen. Generally, boxing matches, UFC fights, the main event is going in there somewhere between 9 and 10 our time, you know, midnight to 1 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. I think it's a great idea, but I think there's going to be some people who are here on fight weekend on September 13th who will potentially get a late start to their day on Saturday and be like, yeah, we got all the time in the world. We'll get over. Our main card starts at 7. Like, and you know, it's 4 o'clock. And it's like, whoa, wait, they're walking in for the main event. So people need to be aware of that. But I'm making a jokey point, but literally at the press conferences, without real MMA media there and people who are kind of just there because they want to make sure they have access or a little bit afraid to ask. And that's not even a tough question. Like, hey, Dana White, when does the fight start? Anyway, long way to say sad for the people who are doing SiriusXM. I was there on that combat channel, and I thought they put out a great product, and they've kind of changed things over the last couple of years where they have a lot of former fighters on there, real good expertise. So we'll see what replaces it. My guess is there's going to be, you know, a bunch of shows that migrate over to YouTube and social media, and that's where you're going to find your experts. We were just talking to Dominic Reyes about 205 and heavyweight. And I'm glad you brought up the point that Reyes, who fights at 205, played his football at Stony Brook, which is kind of an amazing, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Whatever. It's from Hesperia, California, all the way out to Long Island. So there's quite a transition was the word. Not a hard word. But he played safety. So and I'm guessing he probably played around 210 at 6'3.5", 6'4". He played safety. He was saying, hey, fighting heavyweight at 230 is not easy because that's his natural weight. Because I think there's going to be a little void here of American, like, big fellas who can compete at the highest level at heavyweight. You are currently 238. You're 6'5". You played college football around, what, 270, 275?
Yeah, about there.
And did you get his point? Like, I don't believe you could cut to 205. But you would, I wonder what you would be like if you tried to fight and you still weighed 275 and then you cut 10 pounds, if that would be the best weight for you.
See, I've had this conversation with my brothers. We all are very different body types. Like, my youngest is about 6'7", and then I got twin brothers who are about 6 foot. So we're always talking about, you know, oh, we all love MMA, we all love the UFC. Hey, what division would we fight in? I think for myself, I feel like I'm a lot closer to Reyes, whereas, like, my playing weight at 275 in football, that was an effort. I was always constantly that guy who was always the coaches were getting on for not meeting, you know, my weight gain or goals for the week. So I kind of struggle a bit to put a little bit more poundage on. I think if you give me the time that John Jones got to build himself up to get ready for that division, I could do heavyweight. I could put that weight on.
I mean, I would say John Jones, even though he won his big fight up there, that was kind of a lumpier heavyweight. Like, that's not really his best weight, is to be at, you know, 237, 240. He's probably the weird thing with him is his best natural weight is probably around 215 or 220. Now, remember, John Jones, who is now retired, comes from a football playing background. His brother Arthur played it somewhere between 305 and 320 at Syracuse and with the Colts. And then Chandler, who, you know, had an unfortunate end here in the NFL as he had some mental health issues, 260, 255, 265 at 6'5". So he comes from a line of massive dudes. But I do wonder, in the heavyweight division, like, what it's going to look like from here to try to build this division up, because you have someone in Tom Aspinall who is and appears to be very good, but he also has to get some competition.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, that's Tom Aspinall is one of the biggest reasons why, you know, when there was first talks of him and John Jones finally coming together after John Jones beat Stipe, you know, I was very harshly pushing for them to fight because I saw the potential of a John Jones, the heavyweight champion, taking on a guy in Tom Aspinall who was the interim champ. And then if Tom were to get a victory over John Jones in that scenario, I think it would have blossomed into possibly producing, or at least getting it started, to building one of the biggest heavyweight stars the UFC's ever seen in a guy in Aspinall. Not just because of his fight record, not just because, you know, it's all because of the abilities he has, being that big, being that fast, being that great on the feet, being great when you go on the ground. His fighting style is well-rounded. And, you know, the personality-wise, he's a great dude, Tom Aspinall. He seems very nice. He's very, you know, very active on social media as well. But, you know, I think he really could have had the potential, and he still can. He said when this news broke that he was going to be an active heavyweight champion for this company. So, I mean, I think this heavyweight division, we're going to see a lot more of Tom. He's going to be fighting a lot more often than the previous champ. So I think it's in good hands with Aspinall for sure.
Do you think it's weird that at heavyweight in the UFC, with more money available, the sport's bigger than ever, they don't really have competition anymore around the world? Like, Pride went bye-bye a long time ago. Why does it seem harder to get American heavyweights into the sport? Because 15 years ago, there were a lot of American stars who, you know, fought from 240 to 265. I don't really understand what's happened.
I mean, could it possibly be the fact that, you know, when you are the body type of a heavyweight, which you tend to be, you know, not all the time, but tend to be taller guys who are at that bigger body size like that, they're not, as children, not necessarily looking to get punched and kicked in their chins. They're looking to put on helmets. They're looking on to shoot balls. They're looking to do, you know, those different ways of becoming a professional athlete as intent, you know, instead of going to the harder route of becoming a professional fighter.
We're going to ask Ryan McKinnell this question tomorrow, but I have a feeling his answer is going to be, UFC sucks and they don't pay, and that's why. Maybe, I don't know. I also feel like a lot more kids are getting into martial arts, so you would assume big fellas could also play, you know, with football, would also be, you know, participating in some sort of martial art. Okay, so right now what's going on in Vegas is pretty crazy. There's so much happening here. Our good buddy Arash comes by one of our local haunts here. I don't know if you've been to Jackson's before. Have we broken bread here?
My first time.
Yes. Okay, well, you
it's
know
nice.
It's the best affordable steak deal in town.
Yeah.
Because while down on the strip, you know, we're looking at 55 to 120 bucks for a steak. And I love those places. Yeah. These guys do it right. They have $20 steaks with the 1 pound ribeye and the garlic marinated bistro filet. So I just, you know what? I haven't talked to you all week. Well, I did. I actually saw you on Monday, which we're going to talk about. But I didn't get your schedule. Like, what? This is crazy right now. There's a lot of stuff going on in Vegas. So
it's nuts. You know, you got the groundbreaking, which, you know, we were at on Monday. And then UFC. There was something else that I was here for. But, I mean, those were, like, the two big ones, obviously.
Well, I think Canelo Crawford tomorrow is going to be massively important.
Yeah, and I know that we were going to chat either Thursday or Friday, and again, I couldn't do Friday because of that press conference. I mean, a big mega fight, but then the first mega fight at Allegiant Stadium. So, it's going to be huge.
Okay, UFC so far, what have you seen?
Here's the thing. This is one of those fight weekends that a lot of casuals are not really caring about. Again, like, we do need stars, and again, I don't know to what extent you guys have touched on it, but, like, UFC is devoid of any mainstream. When I say mainstream, like, I can, you know, go to the guy on the street and, like, they know who's going to fight this weekend. You know, we don't have that Jon Jones or Conor McGregor or Ronda Rousey. You go down the list of names that casual sports fans would know. So, but I love fight weekend. I'll be at the convention center tomorrow. That's always a fun weekend. But, yeah.
Did you go to the press conference today?
Did not.
Okay. Topuria Oliveira, Kai Kara France, and Alexandra Pantoja. So we're looking at a lot of international flair.
Yes.
It is one of the challenges they have right now. They're doing their traditional press conferences. I'm not sure that they're ever going to go away from this, but without, you know, good English-speaking fighters, when these fights are in the U.S., and it is an international sport, they have some challenges now. But, you know, we've talked about it, that they've come up with this new model where they're feeding internationally. They have a lot of non-English-speaking fighters, but the sport still works. Like, they're still making lots of money. They may not be paying as much as they used to the fighters, but for a business, this formula is actually working. And proof that it's working is they're probably going to get another record-setting TV deal here in the next 6 months.
Yeah, well, the big thing is it's a global sport. And so that's why, like I think they are struggling right now with the American fan and the American viewer. But, you know, you go around the world to different places where these fighters are from, you know, they are watching it. They are consuming it. So it is a big TV deal because it is a global TV deal. You know, it's not a sport where it's a local sport or it's just a sport in the U.S. It is a global sport.
The groundbreaking on Monday.
Yeah.
You were there. The Sporting Trib crew was there. Willie, who's a part of the Sporting Tribune and Cofield and Company. A lot of the, you know, veteran, a lot of the newer people around Vegas and the media were there. I didn't feel the vibe there, but I felt it right after. I don't think that I've covered an event in Vegas where there was so much angst about the event from some people. Did you see a lot of the follow-up afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen a story this divided with the media. I mean, again, I saw you engage with one reporter, and I was going to engage as well just because I think there's a lot of, like, if you don't think the stadium is going to happen, there's a lot of facts that you could point to. You have one former local reporter, and I don't know what he's doing these days, saying, you know, I talked to a PR person, and the cranes were there for one day. They're a rental. Well, bro, like, you could do a drone. Like, those cranes have been there for like a month. They're doing work. Now, they're not doing construction, but they're digging dirt, they're pushing dirt, and you can joke about that, but like, there's enough stuff. Like, we don't need to say like the local media is wearing like hats and stuff. Like, it's just, there's a lot of, and I get the negativity from the fan base. I don't get it from the journalists. Like, if you're a journalist covering this, like, there's a lot of reasons why this is not going to happen, right? I just feel like there's too many big names that are attaching themselves to this that, like, if they thought there was 0% chance, I that's why I'm more in the more than 50% this is going to happen. I mean, you have a ton of people who think it's 0%, which I think is crazy.
Well, there were a lot of important people out there, and it doesn't guarantee the stadium's getting done by John Fisher.
No.
And that's the point I made on Monday, because we keep hearing about this. I got some guff yesterday from one of our regulars, Justin Watkins, and he was like, you always talk tough. You need to be asking John Fisher about his finances. And I'm like, well, one, the setting is not right for that.
Exactly.
Two, we had limited time. These sound like excuses. Also, I've never met John Fisher before. I might not do that the first time I deal with him. Maybe the third time.
Yeah.
We asked. Both John Fisher said it'll be done by 2028.
Yeah.
Rob Manfred said the same thing. But I said on Monday, after you start to see, like, you know, the funding's not there. He doesn't have the money. The money is going to be there from someone.
Exactly.
And I'm telling you, I truly believe if John Fisher runs up against a wall and this thing isn't making progress and he can't put up hundreds of millions of dollars, then I think Rob Manfred first steps in, then talks to local people.
Yeah.
And it's like, where's the money coming from? And I don't mean Rob Manfred's going to threaten the local people, but it's going to be time to put on our thinking caps. Okay, where do we get this money from?
So that was the conversation that I had. The majority of people that I talked to at the groundbreaking, they ran the casinos in town. And we know a lot of these folks. And they're like, it's going to happen. He's going to get the money. There's no way where we're going to have this groundbreaking and we're going to get Major League Baseball and it's like not going to happen. Now, the John Fisher component of this is interesting. I think a lot of the people that you talk to who feel like he can't finance this thing don't understand, like, he will sell his soccer team for at least, when I say at least, no valuation, no professional sports team that is valued at $600 million is sold for less than $600. Like, he'll get at least $600 for that. The banks will be involved. Again, I do not believe the financing will be as big of a problem. Now, where it will be a problem, and the biggest question that we have not gotten a response to, the price has changed.
Yes.
The price has had to have changed. What is that price, and how do you make up for that, right? So, like, that is the biggest question. But by the way, Steve, like, if this was not in Vegas, I totally would be as skeptical as anybody else. I just don't believe this city is in the business of having big groundbreakings and being at the 50-yard line and, like, not completing a project. You know, and again, you could bring up casinos that didn't work. And again, every example I've heard is, like, 2008, right? Right before the recession.
Right.
We're not there right now.
I mean, it took a long time to get the Fountain Blue done. Now, what they did, I'm not really sure that that's succeeding right now. But this will have a timeline because baseball is involved. And my whole point on it'll get done is John Fisher might not be the majority owner. John Fisher might not be involved in ownership at all. He might be a 10% owner because he runs into it. I think Rob Manfred will be like, John, that's enough.
Yeah.
He just did it with Tampa. He just did it with Stu Sternberg.
Yeah.
They're going to sell, we think, to someone, a billionaire in Jacksonville. At some point, like, you are a franchise in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
They don't have to cooperate with you. They don't have to. You might. I mean, it might turn into a, I don't think John Fisher would do this. It could turn into a Dan Snyder hellhole where, you know, there's lawsuits being threatened left and right. But I do believe that he's going to get local investors. This thing is going to be worth a lot on the Las Vegas Strip with a casino adjacent or attached. And I think we could start going down. Listen, there's a lot of money outside the market. We just saw, you know, Mark Walter, and he's not going to buy into this. But we just we see these hedge funds with Steve Cohen getting involved with the Mets, with Mark Walter paying $10 billion. You're telling me there's not some kind of fund that's like, okay, how much to be part of the stadium and own a team? Yeah, we got billions. We'll do that. Or there are billionaires here who own casinos who have been shut out of owning professional sports.
Yeah.
Maybe they get involved.
It's so funny. You know, again, there's a lot of real reasons to be skeptical. But it's funny when you kind of talk to those folks. They're like, he thinks his franchise is worth $2 billion. I'm like, it is. Like, it's the Las Vegas Major League Baseball team is worth at least, not like, oh, my God, they're worth at least $2 billion. And it's like, are you not following what's happening? And like, there's no professional sports team that's being sold low. Like, look at the WNBA franchises. Look at the WSL. Like, you know, like, look at, like, anyone who invests in a sports franchise at, you know, you name the terms, within 5 years, it'll probably be 2x or 3x that number.
Maybe Mark Davis could put together an ownership group. I'm sure he'd love to take it right off the hands of John Fisher.
Yeah. By the way, I mean, the fact that, like,
I don't think we'll be negotiating at the same table. That might have to be via some sort of big bank. But, you know, you mentioned the angst around this, and I totally understand it from the fans. I thought that was weird with Sue Slusser, who works at the San Fran Chronicle, which, by the way, good writer and a really great historic publication, and was just engagement farming, I guess. I don't use that word, but I'm now going to start using it all the time.
Yeah.
When she sent out a large number of Vegas, quote, media members, I like that, wearing A's gear. And I was like, what are you talking about?
Well, the one thing I was going to respond to, you said who, and she said, well, I don't know who they were, but it was two guys. And it's like, listen.
Two.
Yeah, two.
And large number.
Large number. So it's two, and it's probably, listen, they did a nice job of, like, credentialing YouTubers and content creators and whatnot. And so it's like, who are you talking about? It could have been the crew from Fox 5 that has a deal with the A's. So, like, they were wearing, like A's shirts. But then she was like, on the media bus, like a ton of, and they were like, see, like there was no media bus. There was a bus that media got on, but there was filled with like A's fans and politicians.
We took the bus back with a bunch of
the mascot was trying to get on the bus that we were on. There was no media bus. Like there was media that got on the bus that was there for like the entire crowd. So, I mean, that's sort of like the low-hanging fruit. Like, there's actual real reasons to, like, doubt this project. When you get into the whole, you know, the Las Vegas media, it's like, that's ridiculous.
Media on media crime ain't going to help anyone.
No, it's not.
Especially newspaper people. I'd dial down the rhetoric.
Exactly.
I'm not saying we're, like, in the most healthy position right now. You are. Sporting Tribune's gigantic. CEO of the Sporting Trib, at Sporting Trib, up on Twitter. Arash is with us. When we come back, I got to get to some L.A. news. Also, I know you broke bread. There's a big story there about going out to eat with local royalty here in Las Vegas.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Jackson's Bar and Grill on ESPN Las Vegas.
Arash is on the scene. Arash Markazi, Sporting Tribune. Mr. L.A., I got to tone down the Mr. Vegas thing. Although you're back, you got your residence here. You're just talking about all the local spots that I don't know about.
That's right.
Getting tips from you. It's good stuff. We were just talking about the A's groundbreaking. We'll have a lot more coverage of that up on our TikTok and our YouTube shorts. And there was a lot of stuff.
By the way, you were killing it. Like, the commissioner's there and you're like,
well.
And I didn't see what was happening, but like, you're pulling on the commissioner's jacket. And I'm like, what is Steve doing? And he's putting, like, a microphone clip, like they're doing, like, a one-on-one on TV. And he's probably, and then you did that with everyone. You did that with John Fisher. You did that with everyone. It was great.
I mean, I do it with UNLV football and UNLV basketball.
Yeah.
So, when they tell me not to do it,
But
I'm not squirting mustard on their suit.
No, exactly.
But I'm like, I'm getting, listen, we're doing video and we're doing audio.
That's right. It's important to get good audio.
I can't tell you how many times I watch social media and I'm like, the sound!
Yeah,
like,
terrible.
I get so mad at people.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's not that big a deal to ask them, hey, here's a little microphone.
Yeah.
But what I won't do is take that little mini mic and do
my least favorite thing.
Put the mic on the lapel.
I agree.
Little radio inside stuff.
The little microphone thing.
I mean, they work, but they don't work as a handheld.
I agree.
You look like just a complete dork. I want to get to a couple LA stories here in a couple of minutes as Arash is with us. We're live at Jackson's Bar and Grill. Got the best steak deal in town, $20 on the garlic marinated bistro filet and $20 for the excellent 1-pound ribeye. I have some restaurant questions.
Okay.
First of all, I've had a bunch of people text me. I know some LA restaurants, and I know one pastrami place. Is it Johnny's Pastrami? But one of my friends lives near there.
Okay.
Do you know this hat? The hat? Because I think they're coming here. And one of my friends was saying, oh, we just got it. It's coming to Vegas. You never heard of it?
The hat?
It's called the hat. Yeah,
the
pastrami
hat?
Joint. I'm gonna show you during the break.
Okay. I do love pastrami. Langer's, number 19. That's the one where you got pastrami. You got the coleslaw, the Russian dressing on sourdough? No. But yeah, it's great. But I love pastrami.
And that's not the Arash, like you have at Ike's.
No, that's what I have at Ike's, which he has a location in Durango that I was going to go see him at, but I'm going to see Ike's tomorrow.
Very nice.
The number 500, folks, if you have.
Push that sandwich, otherwise we're going to get rid of it.
Yeah, right.
He's got his own sandwich.
Yeah.
All right, so you went out to dinner with Willie Ramirez. He's part of Cofield & Company. And
this is great.
And I missed out on this, and I really regret it, because I like seeing the Willie restaurant when he holds court. He did it again?
He did it again. So he did this for lunch. And so
for lunch he did it.
So this is a spot that he recently found out where, and I don't know if I should say the name, but again, this is close to where he lives.
Yeah, it's Chef Mark, who's actually known around town.
Screezy, is that the way you name it? Yeah. But the way that Willie says it even better, like, Screezy, you got to go Screezy. Okay, so we're leaving the
It was the groundbreaking,
Aces facility.
Right?
Oh, no,
it was Aces. Okay.
The Aces facility. So this was on Tuesday. They're not open for lunch on Tuesday. So we walk in to the restaurant, and so we see that they're closed for lunch. And the woman said, sorry, we're closed, you know, but we are open Wednesday through whatever, Saturday for lunch. But, you know, right now, and then Willie, I think, just wanted to say hi to the chef. That was, so Willie said, oh, that's okay. Can I say hi to Chef Mark? And then Chef Mark did not come out, but his sous chef or the other chef came out. And he said, I just talked to Mark. Please sit down. We'll make you whatever you want.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So we're
wait,
like,
did you say they were going to open it a little bit?
No, they're open for dinner. We're there for like lunch. We're there like lunchtime. So they are not open, but they are like maybe like preparing, but like the chef is there. So it's like me, Willie, Mark is in the back doing something. And then like, but a guy with chef, he's a full on chef. So I don't know if it's the sous chef or whatever. Full on like Italian chef though. Please sit down. We would love to serve you. And so he hands us two menus for dinner. I got
please,
the card.
Okay.
Yeah, this is so
please
great.
Tell me William just ordered off the menu. Cause this is one of the other things he does.
So this
like,
is
he's
great.
Like, you know, I think I want this. And you're like, okay, in this case, they're opening just for you.
Yeah. So Willie got the rigatoni and I got the carbonara. He asked for a salad, and they did make a salad. Now, when they bring the salad, this is like the most like delicious salad. It was like, you know, buffalo mozzarella, ricotta, everything. And Willie said, you know what would be great with this? That cheese bread. And he goes, oh, we have that for dinner. But don't worry, sir. Like, I'll go back and make it for you. So he goes back and brings some amazing cheese bread.
What is going on?
It was incredible. I mean, I had never, and I am crying because they are so, like, the chef comes over, and we're in mid-conversation, and he's like, sorry to interrupt, but how is the meal? Can I bring you anything else? And he's royalty there. I had never seen a place that was closed. We had a private chef for lunch. That was a legit private chef for lunch.
I feel pressure. Here's something cool about Jackson's. Their gaming is great here. For their gamers, they have a special once-a-month Prime Rib Friday.
Ooh.
You can't get it otherwise unless you win your way into eating the prime rib.
Okay.
Like, should I call Brian at Jackson's right now and be like, get a prime rib on. Let's go.
Let's go. Yeah, let's do it.
Now, it might not be done until midnight.
Exactly.
Maybe they got some leftover. They can fire it up for us. I feel pressure now.
You know, we
can't compete with
we
that.
We can't compete with Willie when it comes to this. I mean, it's such a
just
great.
The couillons on the guy to walk into a place. They're nice enough to serve. And then he's like, well, I need this.
No.
We got the cheese bread. Well, we don't have bread right
but
now,
but to
sir.
Be honest,
you know, we're going to bake a loaf for you.
He really did want me to meet Chef, and we did meet Chef at the
beautiful.
End. But the fact was, like, he said, please sit down. We will take care of you. I mean, I had never seen anything like
that's
it.
That's just insanity.
It was so good, so delicious.
So we've consumed a lot of NBA information the last couple of days with the draft and a lot of these big moves like the KD trade. Something that kind of I thought snuck through, and maybe it hit some national shows, but it's definitely relevant for us. Griffin, can you see? Can you get the Chris Mannix cuts here? So, Chris Mannix, who's covered the NBA and actually covered boxing for a long time too, was doing the Ringer and was with Simmons.
Yeah,
and they're doing a quick podcast interview, and they get on the subject of the future of the NBA and what OKC just did, and Sam Presti.
Yeah.
And I hadn't thought of this angle before, but it is really an incredible angle. Fire this as they start talking about Sam Presti in the coming years is actually going to be as valuable a free agent potentially as anyone, including players, in the NBA. Fire this.
Because I think this is the potential biggest free agent that could be out there. Sam Presti in Oklahoma City. Like, we're going to get two expansion teams probably the next 3 years. If you're the new Sonics, what's Sam Presti worth to you?
Okay, that's a great question.
Yes.
He said we're going to get two expansion teams in the next 3 years. Did he mean it's going to be named in the next 3 years? Or is that how accelerated this thing could be? Like, it could come out later this year who the expansion teams are, and then a team could be playing – teams could be playing in their new cities in, like, 3 seasons? What are you hearing on this?
I think we will get some clarity in terms of timeline teams next month. I really do believe that.
Really?
At the Board of Governors meeting in Las Vegas – I do think we have hit all the timelines that the commissioner has set in terms of new CBA, new media rights deal, da da da, and all that stuff. And to be honest, we're in a great position now. I mean, the Lakers being sold for $10 billion and the Celtics for $6 billion. It's like these franchises have never been more valuable than they are right now. So I do think we'll get some clarity on the timeline. So that'll be next month. I do think by the All-Star weekend in Los Angeles, so that'll be 26, we'll maybe get more kind of like an official, like at some point we will get the teams. Like the Las Vegas has been granted a like expansion franchise. Generally though, like what group, right? So like the groups will be put together. I do think the teams will be in position to play at the 28 season, 28,
so
29.
Technically 25, 26. So let's just call it coming up is 2025, then 26, then 27. It's not going to be 27. 28?
28. Like October fast. I think, listen, we'll see how the Oakland A's plays out. But 28 has the chance to be like a huge year in Las Vegas sports where you get Major League Baseball and the NBA. The NBA is unique where, like, listen, they don't, they will probably get a new home, but they can play at T-Mobile as soon as you want them to. If you want to look at a timeline, look at the Vegas Golden Knights, right? Like, from when they were first announced, like, Vegas is getting a franchise, then it's like the ball gets rolling. Then you got the expansion draft, then you get the team together. Like, I think this will be fast-tracked where we get a team by 28.
Okay. Well, now, there's a question that's an obvious question.
Yeah.
Let's go back to our conversation about what Manfred and John Fisher told us. By the way, you notice on social media, I included you guys on a scrum. I didn't say told me because that's a new thing
of course,
now. The kids these days with their journalism
school. Told me.
Right. They told me. Yeah, there were seven people there. They didn't tell you. But they both said, confident it's done in 2028. I'm not that confident. I think the A's stadium could be done for the 2029 season instead. Yeah. So there is a case where we might have an expansion team playing in the fall of 2028 before the A's are here in 2029.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I definitely think that could happen. But where it's different is with basketball, they are not they don't need a new – like T-Mobile was built for the NBA. And Bill Foley has been very vocal about saying we would like to be the home of this team. Now, of course, if you're a multi-billionaire like owner, and most of these guys have to be, obviously, at this point, it will be a group. But you want to have your own home. But there is for sure a scenario where they play a season or two at T-Mobile, and that's fine. It is an amazing arena still. So, like, it's not like the Athletics need a new home.
Give me a Mannix, too, where he follows up on the Presti point, the Sam Presti point, who's running the OKC Thunder.
He was 29 when he came here. He's 49 when he's coming back, and he's going to build this team. Prophecy fulfilled, all that stuff. He wouldn't have any reason to feel bad about leaving Oklahoma City. The chance to do something like build a team from scratch for a guy like Sam Presti, who has built a title contender back in 2012 with the peak of the Durant, Harden, Westbrook years, and a title winner. I just think that's something to watch.
Okay, that part of the conversation was he'll go back to Seattle. Wait a second. Wait a second. Hold on. No, Vegas.
Yeah,
no, we're going to have the more glamour franchise. I can't wait to see who the owners of these teams are.
Yeah.
Because what if they are Mark Walter types?
Oh, they.
What if they are like billionaires 30 and 40 times over.
Yeah.
You don't think that an ownership group in Vegas is going to be competitive to get best executive in the league?
But you understand the story with the
Seattle.
Totally understand
that part.
It's like he started with the Seattle Sonics and he'll come back to the Sonics.
But I would like to stir the pot and go, screw Seattle, Vegas.
What Mannix says in that clip or what he said, who gives him the best offer, and the most intriguing is the Pat Riley deal, is a piece of the team.
Yep.
Because these franchises, a piece of a team is not what a piece of a team was anymore, right? So if you're talking about a $6 billion franchise and I give you, I don't know what the percentage
is. They were saying 1 or 2%.
Which I think, you know, to be honest, it may come down to who gives him more. Like, who gives them like the Tom Brady deal? I heard Tom Brady's got like 10%. Now, I don't think it'll be that high. But if you make him feel like this is his franchise, he is, with what he's done, going to get a Pat Riley deal. And now it's going to be like, who's going to give him the biggest cut of that team?
I was telling you that I was looking at one of your posts and on the thread. I love reading threads because you're like, okay, yeah. Wackadoos.
Yeah.
The thread underneath this Mannix thing saying that OKC is going to lose him to Seattle.
Yeah.
It was all OKC fans.
Of course.
What do you think they were saying?
Like he would never leave, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Like, and which is like, first of all, if he leaves, if, like, he's done everything that you would have wanted for him and some, right? Like, by the way, at the end of the day, it's not his fault that a team of Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and James Harden and Serge Ibaka didn't win. I mean, he put that team together. And then he does it again. He does it again with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren. You go down the list. Like, he's like, there's nothing more that you could have hoped for this guy to do. Listen, I think there's loyalty there. I think he likes it in Oklahoma City, but I don't know if they can match what an expansion team can do on two fronts. A, you are going to build this team from the ground up. You are like a number one. That's the unique thing about Vegas. So what's going to happen in Seattle is they're going to reclaim that history. It'll be a hell of a gap. Like, remember, like, the Cleveland Browns, they had like a few years gap. I mean, Seattle's going to have a 20-year gap. But they will reclaim that name, that history, that, you know, the retired jerseys and the titles and things like that. In Vegas, it'll be like from scratch. Like the Las Vegas, you whatever, like the day one, Vegas born, that kind of stuff. Like that's special. That's very unique.
Coming up, Rosh, stick around for a couple more minutes. So Rosh is here at Jackson's Bar and Grill, 6020 West Flamingo. Come down and see him. Might be breaking bread here afterwards. I don't want to give away secrets, but I want your reaction to we're getting more and more information on Canelo and Crawford, and it does look like it is going to be, we'll call it, an afternoon boxing card at Allegiant. Mm.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Rosh is here, nice enough to join us for an hour from the Sporting Tribune, Sporting Trib, up on Twitter. Well, I'm glad to see that Willie's doing some stuff for you. He wrote a good post-game story on the Aces. That was good for the Aces. You know, starting to get a little momentum here, feel better about themselves.
It was my first time at the practice facility yesterday. It's incredible. And so, listen, like they've struggled at the beginning of the season. Hopefully, that big win over the Fever, maybe a turning point in the season. We will see. I don't know.
We were talking some NBA and Sam Presti being a free agent at some point, OKC, and maybe it would go to the highest bidder. Maybe Vegas could get him. I don't know if the new Vegas group would give him ownership. Maybe Seattle could get him. I am very fascinated to see who's going to buy this NBA team. Who's going to put up the money in expansion and what the price is going to be. What do you think it is now? If the Lakers just went for $10 billion,
well, I think
Celtics got sold for like $6.5 billion.
I think it's 5 to 6. Yeah. So, you know, because we keep hearing LeBron's going to be a part of that group, perhaps. But like there's going to be some big names involved here. And it could be a group, it could be one person. But, like, in terms of professional sports ownership, who's got $5 billion? Who's got $6 billion to spend on a team? Like, that's...
I know a couple people.
Yeah. Here? Or...
No, outside the market.
Okay.
Who have been rumored to want to get into sports ownership. What do you think if Vegas had Jeff Bezos...
Oh,
huge. Well, I was saying about an hour and a half ago, he's not being greeted real well for his big wedding in Venice. not $48 million wedding.
Yeah.
We got a guy who's going to be, I don't know if he's going to be here, but he's the reason, a big part of the reason Canelo and Crawford's happening.
Yeah.
Turkey El Sheikh.
Yeah, exactly.
I would assume someone in Saudi Arabia wants a sports team. Like, are we the first team, our NBA team?
Yeah.
And I don't, Adam Silver.
We'll see.
I don't know. Like, what?
Yeah.
Is it going to be the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a group if they are not comfortable with, you know, money coming from certain places of the world.
There's a lot going into this.
Yes.
But I think eventually someone is going to break and go.
Oh, for sure. Just, it's too much money. It's too much. And then at some point it gets to a point where, like, if he offers $10 billion, for example, for the Vegas franchise, like, you're going to say no to that? You know, I don't know. My money talks.
Might be John Fisher. You want to get the stadium done?
Yeah, or not? Yeah, my thing about John is like I think if he didn't have the reputation, it is not hard to get investment with a professional sports franchise. It's just John Fisher, for whatever reason, has the worst reputation of any sports owner that I've ever covered outside of one Mr. Donald Sterling. And for totally separate reasons, John Fisher is not in the same class. But anyway. Yeah.
Question all week on the show, and we'll give it to Arash. Who is going to win our next major league championship? I'm going to include the NBA team, unnamed at this point. Is it the A's, VGK, the Raiders, Aces, or the NBA team?
The Aces. I'll just say the Aces. I mean, like, I know like they're struggling now, but like I think they have the infrastructure in place. They have like the best player in the league, in my view. So it's, you know.
You're the second person who said the Aces. Two said VGK.
Yeah.
I said the A's.
Yeah.
And then I got yelled at yesterday by Justin Watkins. He's like, what did that groundbreaking do to you? You are a complete homer now.
But the thing is, like, we don't know when they're going to get here. And it's like, it'd be great if they made the playoffs. It'd be great if we had like playoff baseball in Vegas. Like, do I think that they're going to compete with the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Mets? No.
It's the most open sport in all of professional sports in America. 15 champions in the century.
Yeah.
15 different organizations.
That could
you
be
get on the dance floor.
Yeah.
Nick Kurtz hits 13 homers in a postseason.
You never know.
Yeah, that guy's going to be a 47 homer guy in 2028.
We could be having a great October. October 2028 with the... the A's maybe making the postseason and the expansion NBA team.
By the way,
yes.
I just came up with someone who Las Vegans may be more like weary and wary of. I don't actually have a name, but whoever's running F1.
Oh, yeah. I just think like F1 in general. Like, by the way, like this will be the year like when it comes up, it's like, oh, that's still happening again? Like, first year was a lot of buzz. Second year was like, did they figure it out? And third year was like, oh, they're still here?
A lot
like,
of local like, specials. They're not going to have to do a lot of road work. I promise. They're not going to. Yeah, they terrible. Will. They're still going to affect this trip.
Come to Jackson's. They are not affected by the F1.
There you
craziness.
Go. Off the strip. Easy to
exactly.
get to. Good plug. Last 30 seconds here. All right. What do you expect tomorrow with Canelo Crawford? I think this is a gigantic deal.
Huge.
We got a fight in our 65,000-seat stadium. I think this is going to be great hype for the fight. Maybe not from the fighters, but the whole show.
Huge, huge hype around it. You got Canelo Crawford. It'll be at Allegiant Stadium. But then the fact that like UFC is involved, TKO with Dana White. So very pumped for it. What an like the countdown begins to Canelo Crawford at Allegiant Stadium.
My lord, Mexican Independence Day.
The best. The
how
best
many
weekend.
Mexican Americans are going to make the trip up from Southern California?
A lot. It'll be amazing. That drive to Vegas, it'll be packed, bumper to bumper, baby.
That's by the way. That's another good question. A stadium done first. NBA team here or freaking Brightline? Can we get this train?
Brightline
going?
Is not happening, unfortunately.
Something. We got any kind of train?
It.
What are we doing? Nothing?
Not yet, unfortunately.
Oh, Rosh.
I want it to happen.
I know, me too.
But the fact that it was going to be in 2028 and now they've kicked the can down the road to 2030? Like, what the heck's going on there?
A lifetime. I'll go third person. Cofield has lived in Las Vegas. I just want a chance to not drive.
I agree.
Please, give me a train. Thanks to Brian here at Jackson's. Everyone come down here. Great place, great local business, great steaks. Flamingo and Jones, Jackson's Bar and Grill.